Hi, everyone. The National Association of Governing Boards releases an annual report card for the nation's schools. In September of this year, the report card showed continuing concerning results surrounding the math and science scores of our nation's students. Less than one-third of students scored above proficiency on the science exam, and more than one-third scored below basic levels of proficiency. And in practical terms, that could mean that they would be unaware that plants need sunlight to grow and to reproduce. Thus, we face a dilemma. We need STEM jobs to be filled, but we also know that fewer students are interested and fewer students are prepared in the STEM field. We'll be talking about how use of robotics and other tools like that could be a solution to the problem. We'll be doing that on today's Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thank you, Trinity. Joining me today is Jason McKenna. He is the author of What Can STEM Do for Your Classroom? He's also the Vice President of Global Education Strategy for VEX Robotics. VEX is an international company specializing in integration of artificial intelligence and robotics into curriculum for pre-K through higher education. Before transitioning into robotics, Jason was a teacher in Pennsylvania. Jason, thank you so much for your time today. I mentioned before we started the recording that I was excited to have props. And for the listeners that are not watching on YouTube, this is a good reason for them to go over and watch. But thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate the chance to get to know you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So I want to start, before we get into the cool toys that you have in front of you, by talking a little bit about your background. You started out as a teacher. What subjects did you teach? And then maybe talk about, you know, what led to your career transition into sort of, you know, educational technology space and specifically robotics.
Yeah, happy to do that. So I got hired to teach in 1997. I got hired to teach fifth grade. I have an elementary education certification, and then I was actually displaced after my first year teaching and up in sixth grade after that. And I spent the next approximately 14 years teaching sixth grade, and I taught everything. I taught science, I taught social studies, I taught math, I taught language arts. I pretty much taught everything, and I taught, you know, across the entire spectrum of students. So one year I would have the quote-unquote high math class, another year I would have a class of 20 students and 15 would have IEPs, and I'd be teaching with a special education teacher. So I did all of that for about 15 years into my academic career. Now, it's important for me to note, the last computer science course I have ever taken was when I was a freshman in high school, which I believe was 1988, if my math is right in my head. So I came into this position, to the point of your question, without any real background in engineering or computer science at all. But at that point in my teaching career, year 15, I was pretty much burned out. I was sick and tired of teaching kids how to diagram sentences and to solve one-step equations. I needed something new for my classroom. And while I was teaching, the state of Pennsylvania passed a law that said if you got you could just take the test to get the certification. This doesn't happen anymore, but I went and I took a certification to get my secondary history cert, right? So I was K-12 certified, and my district at the time decided to make their enrichment program also K-12. So I was the only person that was dual certified to do that. So I was very welcoming to this. I'm like, this is fantastic. This is the change that I need. I want to do this well. And the first month or so that I tried to do that job, I failed miserably. I was probably more depressed at that point than I was when I was still teaching sixth grade. And I went to I basically pleaded to my director of special education. And I was like, listen, I need something here. I'm dying right now in the classroom. And I think she took pity on me. And she said, okay, here's what I'm going to have you do. Interview all the students, give them a survey, find out what they want to do. And then we'll rewrite their GIEPs, their gifted individualized education plan, and then you can go from there. I said, fantastic, great. Now, again, I have no background in science or engineering, computer science, anything else like that. I've always been a humanities guy. So I'm thinking, oh, these kids are going to want to learn Shakespeare plays, or these kids are going to want to read this piece of literature. This is going to be great. They all come back and they want to learn robotics and computer science. And I'm just like, oh, man, I don't know anything about robotics and computer science. So the backstory to that is all of these students during the summer used to go to Carnegie Mellon University, which was about a half hour drive from where I was teaching at, because I taught right next to the Pittsburgh airport. And they would take this summer camp called Sea Mites, in which they would build and code robots. So they came back during the school year, and this is what they wanted to do. This is what they were passionate about. So at that time, the only people that were really developing any kind of curriculum around robotics and computer science was the Carnegie Mellon Robotics Academy, which is located here in Lawrenceville in Pittsburgh. And it's an offshoot of Carnegie Mellon University. And the person that was running that academy, his name was Robin Shoup, and he was, like myself, a former teacher. I wasn't a former teacher at the time, but he had taught about 28 years in Pittsburgh public schools. And I'm just the type of person, like, I just had a ton of questions. So I would call every day and be like, okay, what curriculum should I buy? What coding software should I buy? How do I do this, right? I have no idea what I'm doing, right? I can barely change a light bulb. Now I got to build a robot. Please help. And Robin just took a liking to me because I think he saw a lot of himself in me when he first got started. And we just started engaging. All of a sudden, one time he was like, hey, do you want to come one summer and help me write curriculum? And I was like, sure. And that's how I got started in educational technology.
I noticed, I want to get to the robots in just a second. Sure. But when I started the intro to the show, it really struck me when I was doing background research and when my assistant Trinity was passing some on about, you know, what sort of the state of STEM education is. I mean, mm-hmm. as a communication person, we get some STEM students into our college that are interested in IP networking and, you know, running networks and that sort of thing. But we're not an engineering college. We're not a biology or sciences college.
Yeah.
And so I guess part of me doesn't see that on a daily basis. The stats, though, you know, I think you could say that there's certainly evidence that we have to start changing tracks because students are losing interest. I mean, a lot of the evidence that I was looking at said that especially middle school female girls will enter middle school with some interest in science and STEM, and then that interest will wane while they're in middle school. And then by the time, you know, they get tested in high school, the number of students that are at high proficiency or even moderate proficiency is pretty small. There's a question here.
Very good.
What do you think? I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this a lot. What are the reasons for STEM education, given all the potential of it for mm-hmm. careers and higher learning?
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that in our K-12 systems that we see that steep decline in STEM education interest and proficiency?
Yeah, great question. And there's a couple, just like any other complex problem, it's not one easy answer, right? But I'll throw a couple things out here that we could chat about. Number one, the importance of STEM starting early, right? So we at VEX have done a lot of research. I talk about this in my book, and I said a lot of research there that talks about the fact that students as young as 5 or 6 years old form an opinion about their proficiency to do STEM, not just STEM, but also things like math. You ask students when they're 5 or 6 years old and say, is computer science something you see yourself doing when you get older? Once that opinion holds true, it's very difficult to change. So I travel all over the world talking about STEM education. One of the things I say is that you can have a great, as you cited, middle school STEM program, and that's fantastic. I'm not knocking anyone that starts implementing STEM in the middle school. But the research is very clear. Oftentimes, it's too late for the exact reason that you just mentioned. Those kids that are interested in STEM and want to do STEM, they flourish in those really well established middle school STEM programs. However, those students, for whatever reason, at a very young age decided this is something that's not for them, mm-hmm. right? They're not going to flourish. They might take a class if they're forced to take a class, but when it comes time for them to choose, this is a pathway that they're not going to choose. So when you were mentioning for your audience looking on YouTube, so this side of the continuum down here is all geared to students that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. It's imperative that we provide young students opportunities to engage STEM in a way that is meaningful to them and is engaging to them so they don't form that opinion. Now, the second part of the problem is that, and this ties into starting STEM early, is oftentimes the people that advocate for STEM education are professional engineers, and it's industry, right? And it's saying, we have all these STEM jobs to fill. We need you to help fill these jobs, right? And I get why industry is saying that, but as you know, as an educator, education's not about getting the job. It's part of it. But when you're talking to a young kid, you're talking to a middle school kid student, you're saying, hey, it's really important that you study STEM so that you can get a job. That argument does not resonate with them at all. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about STEM and the utility of STEM for students is just about a job outcome, oftentimes that messaging falls upon deaf ears. So we have to stop doing that. And we have to especially stop doing that to our youngest students, right? So don't go in a kindergarten classroom and talk to them about a job they're going to get when they're 23 years old, yeah, right? Instead, talk about the beauty and wonder of STEM education. And that actually ties into the third thing, and that's a lack of high quality teacher professional development. One of the things I say, you mentioned AI at the beginning of the podcast. Everything about artificial intelligence, everything about computer science in the world that's going on, our teachers oftentimes, especially our elementary teachers, K to five, are uncomfortable talking about that because what if someone asked me a question about AI? What if someone asked me a question about how a neural network works? What if someone asked me to define what an algorithm is? Because right now we're doing a poor job to our pre-service teachers, and we're also doing a poor job with our teachers in the field, giving them high quality and ongoing professional development, they feel uncomfortable having these conversations in their classrooms. So I get asked the question all the time, how to implement STEM, right? And you don't have to, I mean, I always say I work for Vector Bug. It'd be great if you bought all these robots, but that's not how you necessarily have to get started, right? Talk about current events. Talk about things like, you know, we use drones right now to help the population of orca whales all throughout our oceans in the Atlantic Ocean, because the drones can fly over where the whales are, can see where they habitate at, they can collect things from the whales, and then we use computer models to help make these predictions about where they're gonna be and what they're gonna need. That is something you can just talk about with your students in your classroom, students that might be interested in wildlife or conservation, to get them hooked upon and say, hey, this is an example of what we call STEM. This is combining all these disciplines together to help solve a real world problem. So there are other reasons to address the issue that you described a moment ago, but to me, those are the three main ones.
Yeah, very on point. I agree with you. We, in my college, but going back, you know, several years ago, we, right before COVID, for several years, we hosted a coding camp for middle school girls that was sort of sponsored by one of our alums. The reason they were in there was not for jobs, as you said. The reason they were in there is because it allowed them to create cool things and be creative. And to a person, they would say, I like the creativity aspect of it, even though while they were doing that, they were learning about scientific concepts. So I totally get that. In my college right now, my students, and again, I also wouldn't talk to a college freshman about what their career is going to be because that also shuts them down. But, you know, a lot of the STEM related material, besides the networking aspect that I mentioned earlier, when we have students creating video games, being able to understand the physics behind natural environments so that it can be realistic in the game, or the physics behind human physiology to make characters animate effectively, is very STEM related, very math related in the way that it's done in Unreal Engine and Unity, and so they're learning STEM even though they're communication people that would say I'm not a science or math person. It permeates, you know, as to what you were getting at. Let's look at or have you talk about. I mean, one of the impressive things for listeners, if you've not had a chance to go onto the Vox website and look at what Vex has available in terms of the robots that Jason has in front of him. It's really impressive, but even more impressive, you have curriculum that goes along with that. Can you kind of give the 10,000 foot view of the types of solutions and opportunities that Vex has for teachers that are wanting to integrate this type of technology learning?
Yeah, thank you. what we really kind of pride ourselves here at VEX is we want to offer schools and teachers and countries and a solution, not just a particular tool, right? So if you think about, again, what makes a successful implementation of STEM at your school, you obviously need the correct tool. The reason why I fell in love with teaching robotics, again, is not because I love coding in my free time or I love building in my free time, is that it allowed me to do the things that I struggled to do in my classroom for a long period of time. So just one quick example, I tell the story all the time that I was probably the worst teacher in the history of public education at group work. I would put three kids in a group, one person would do everything, and then that parent would call or send me an email being angry at me. The middle person would do nothing. The third person was either asleep or talking to his or her boyfriend or girlfriend or doing, but not doing the task at hand, right? And I tried everything to make group work more effective for my students. I tried everything to get them all engaged. And literally the very first lesson I taught with the robot, my students were collaborating, they were on task, they were talking about what it was they wanted to be able to do. And honestly, that was the big light bulb moment for me. That's when I fell in love with it, was because it was such a good organizer for project-based learning. Mm-hmm. So the tool is important. You have to be able to create something that has a low barrier of entry so everyone can come in and have success right away, but also has a very high ceiling so those students that want to be able to take it to the next level can actually do that. But the tool itself is not enough. You also have to have curriculum, right? Teachers are so overwhelmed with everything that's being asked of them every single day. Asking them to learn a tool and then create the curriculum around it is just a bridge too far. So what you want to be able to do is ensure them that you have curriculum that allows them to meet the needs of the students at their particular level. So the biggest challenge that I have with my job at VEX Robotics is that no one implementation is the same. So I get asked a question, I'll be in Europe here soon, I'll get asked a question, you know, how is STEM being implemented all over the world? And I will say, there is no specific pattern for it. Some people have a class the students have to take every single day. Some people are doing it as an after-school club. Some people are doing it 1 hour a week. So we have to be able to create curriculum that's flexible enough to meet all those particular needs, but is also robust enough that the students are engaged in meaningful learning experiences. And then the third part of that, obviously, is we have to provide the professional development and the ongoing support, which we do through VEX Professional Development Plus, so the teachers feel confident about actually being able to do this in their classroom. Nothing saddens me more than, again, when I travel and I talk to an administrator or I talk to a government official, and they talk about the investment that they made in STEM or robotics, but none of those tools are being utilized because the teachers don't feel prepared and confident to actually be able to implement it within their classroom. So once you combine and you develop a really high quality product, then you match that with high quality curriculum, and then you also match that with high quality teacher professional development, that's when I really feel you have an ability to make an impact in schools.
Maybe take a moment and bring to life a way that a teacher might use one of the robots. I mean, you've got some mm-hmm. in front of you, and I don't expect you to turn it on and drive it around, but like, what would be an example of how a teacher might, you know, have that piece of equipment or multiple iterations of it and integrate that into a lesson?
Yeah. So if you think about, let's focus on elementary for a second. We were talking about that earlier, right? Oftentimes, you know, if you think about what makes a young student, let's just say a second grade student, successful in a math or a language arts classroom, okay? There's been a lot of research over the last few years that points to spatial intelligence and spatial reasoning, right? The ability to understand objects in space and the ability to manipulate objects in space. I had students when I taught, they would write on their paper and they would go right off their paper and keep writing on the desk and never realize that the paper ended, right? That's a lack of spatial reasoning, right? Ability to develop working memory, right? the ability to have executive function. These are all things that we consider under the heading of like school readiness, but they're all related to spatial reasoning and things like motor skills. So when people talk about the importance of hands-on learning, kind of anecdotally, we know that if you teach something hands-on, it becomes stickier, right? Mm-hmm. But there's actually a lot of research, again, under the realm of spatial reasoning to support that. So if I have like my VEX AIM robot or I have my VEX 1-2-3 robot, imagine now instead of doing a math concept with a number line via pen and pencil, now you're actually manipulating a robot and you're seeing how the robot moves and you're connecting that to number sense. Mm-hmm. That's a really powerful way to treat numbers as the actual three-dimensional objects and having magnitude as opposed to being something flat and two-dimensional. And incorporating that into your elementary math classroom is a very powerful way not just to introduce STEM, but to also improve math scores, which of course all schools are trying to do. So really the secret to a successful STEM implementation, this ties back to your previous question, is finding ways to integrate these robots into the regular curriculum, right? So not as an add-on, but if you do that, that's fine, but incorporate them into your regular curriculum. And of course our job is to show you actually how to be able to do that. Then you get into like a construction robot here or the other construction robots I have on here. Now you can create a robot and have it act out a scene in the story and you're tied into language arts, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously you get the engineering and you get the computer science all kind of embodied within it. But it's really a fascinating way, again, to introduce project-based learning to your classroom and to make your classroom more active and engaging. But doing it in that hands-on, minds-on way really allows you to impact learning outcomes in a powerful way.
Mm-hmm. VEX Robotics, obviously, you know, given the stuff that you have sitting in front of you is known for the robotics, but AI obviously is also becoming a big part, and you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
How are you all integrating artificial intelligence into this world that you've created around the robots?
Yeah, great question. And this is when I travel next week, this is what I'll be talking about. But first of all, it's important to think about what AI is, right? And think about how to approach it, like in a classroom setting, for example. I get the question all the time, do I need to teach computer science now since AI can write code? And my answer to that is, this is my opinion, but my answer to that is yes, it's more important to teach computer science now more than ever because AI is a component of computer science. And without really understanding computer science, you're not really understanding how you're applying AI and artificial intelligence, right? So even with our youngest students, like this VEX 1-2-3 robot right here, this has an eye sensor in front of it that's able to detect things like proximity and a color of an object. And we partnered with the University of Florida CS Everyone Center, and we did a professional development with teachers at a local school district here in Pittsburgh, where you talked about how does a computer, or in our case, a robot, see differently than you do, right? A computer sees and a robot sees a lot differently than we do. But that is the beginning of AI literacy, right? Understanding how a computer or a robot can see different than how you see, right? So that's what we did. We partnered with the University of Florida and we partnered with these teachers and we did a co-design session with them. And we said, okay, if you were to receive a PD, first of all, how do you perceive PD to be effective? And then second of all, how or what would you want to learn about artificial intelligence to make an AI PD effective? So we did that and we did that professional development with them. And we actually created a series of lessons that just taught the basics of artificial intelligence literacy for young students. So again, it's important that these are things that we introduce to students at a very young age. But then just this past spring, we released this product right here, which is VEX AIM, and that has an AI vision sensor on it. And that's what was really we released to begin teaching students about how to use and apply artificial intelligence in the classroom.
Different technology. Every friend that I have that has a Roomba has great stories about it.
And yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And we talk about, I mean, there's some underlying similarities to what you're describing.
It's 100% because it has the eye sensor on a Roomba is the exact same thing. It works the exact same way. as in our, 1-2-3 robot, our AIM robot, and the eye and the optical sensors we have on the runs, it literally works the exact same way. Yeah.
Yeah. When Trinity and I were looking through research on specifically, you know, the use of VEX robots, we found some independent research that was done by researchers not directly affiliated with the company.
Yeah.
It talked about the impact of robotics on student motivation to learn STEM. Do you want to comment at all on, you know, some of the evidence that you've seen about how student motivation is impacted?
Yeah. So, If you have an opportunity, so I often get the question, Rod, specifically around our robotics competitions, because I talk about this in my book. I talk about this in the introduction to my book. You know, I'll never forget one of my very first VEX World competitions, right? And the finals always happen in a dome. There's 15,000 kids there. And at the end of the finals, we announce next year's game. And the kids, it's like a rock concert. They absolutely lose their mind. And I was walking out with the co-founder of VEX, Bob Midlich. He's our co-founder and CTO. And he looks at me and he goes, "These kids have no idea how much work they just signed up for." And when he told me that, I mean, it was like a 2x4 hit me in the face, because as a veteran of 20 years teaching, right, that's always the magic that you've been looking for, right? Put that in a bottle and bring it to my room. It's rigor, it's enthusiasm, it's students collaborating. That's what you want. So the question I get is why, right? Why is it working so well in that particular setting and not in others, right? And as I've thought about this question a lot over the years, I've kind of settled upon a couple different things. And a lot of these obviously are related to research. Number one, student choice, right? So when a student goes to a robotics competition, there's a student-centered policy, meaning like, I can't build the robot. I can't, because the students have to do it or they get disqualified. And they have to log all that information in their engineering notebook to ensure they actually did. And then judges interview them, right? So a student can't wait to show you their robot because it's their robot. Mm-hmm. No one told them to build it. They came up with it together. It's their robot. It's their game strategy. It's their design. So that element of student choice is embodied throughout everything that we do. From a STEM perspective, that's number one. Number two, everything we do is collaborative, right? So you always have the opportunity to work with your peers as opposed to essentially sitting and listening to a lecture from your teacher. Not there's anything wrong with lecture. I did it for a long time when I taught, and a lot of people do it very, very well. But students like, especially middle school students, like to work with their peers and work things out through them. And this all connects back to, again, what you talked about when you talked about the importance of curriculum a few moments ago, is that our curriculum has to give students choice, mm-hmm. and it has to give students an opportunity to collaborate. But when we say collaborate, like I work with, there's like 23 people in this office, and if I ask them to self-organize, they struggle. So you have to be able to put the structure into place where the kids can collaborate effectively, and then you have to do the PD for the teachers so they feel comfortable being a facilitator to that collaboration, to that student choice. And then the last part about it, which I honestly feel is essentially the most important, and that is student-centered assessment, right? I see a lot of people that do that, that craft fantastic lessons. They have great tools, good PD, the whole nine yards, but it all falls apart because they do assessment the wrong way. I used to hate the question, "Mr. McKenna, is this going to be graded?" I hated that question, right? But I realized that the reason why the students were asking that question is because that was the incentive structure I created in my classroom. And as long as the incentive structure was that, I was never going to get student choice. I was never going to have real collaboration. I was never going to have really good student engagement. So the three most important things that I think about when I think about engagement and to robotics and really anything else, to be honest with you, is giving students choice, giving them opportunities for real collaboration, and making assessment student-centered.
You know, as you're talking about that, and you've mentioned professional development a couple times now, if I'm a teacher that's, you know, never used this type of equipment, and then to hear you talk about how this integrates into a lesson, I might bring the conclusion to bear that this is so much work. But yet, mm-hmm. you all have actually uncovered some evidence that the amount of prep time for lessons may actually be reduced for teachers once they sort of start using this type of an approach.
That's 100% correct, because if you think about it, right, at the end of the day, we are after raising student outcomes, right? We want students to be better at math. We want students to be better communicators, better writers, all those particular things. And however you want to measure that, right? That's another podcast that we can have, right? But however you want to measure that, that's what you want. So for years, again, I tried many, many, many different ways to get students to accept unstructured problems and to find multiple solutions to be able to solve them. Again, to collaborate well, to document their thinking and to engage in metacognitive strategies and all of that, right? And I would try something, it would fail. Then I would research something else and I would try it again and then that would fail. Maybe this one worked a little bit, but it didn't get me all the way there. The reason why I fell in love with teaching robotics is because it finally became the answer for me, right? It allowed me to do all those things to reach the student learning outcomes that I wanted to be able to reach. So I can just lean into this one thing as opposed to trying 15 different things every single year. So in that respect, is it going to be, it's a little bit of short-term pain for a lot of long-term gain if you really invest into this for sure.
Well, and you know, I've not taught with robots. I've taught a lot with, you know, different types of software platforms that are relevant to this field, and some other technical things like that. You know, one of the observations I have is that I put a lot more work into trying to design that 1.5 hour lecture than I do sort of envisioning a class period where students are doing a lot of hand-on working. Now, it's not to say that that's not work. There's a lot of strategy that goes into that. But I buy what you're saying. I mean, you know, I always found myself more engaged when I knew that we were going to have a lot of fun getting our hands dirty in a class period than me up at the front of the room with my, you know, yellowing legal pad. So
The thing I used to tell beginning teachers, all novice teachers all the time when I was still teaching, was that one of the biggest challenges of teaching is you can find that lesson plan that does one great lesson. That's fantastic. Now you have to do it 185 more times.
Yeah.
So what's your answer to that? So oftentimes we search for that one great lesson or that one great idea or that one great classroom opener, but can you scale it? Mm-hmm. Can you do that over the course of an entire school year? That's really the challenge to your point.
I think the last question that I have, and you're actually just starting to get into it right there. If I'm a teacher listening to this podcast and I'm like, okay, I've got some money, you know, for my classroom. I know that's a fantasy land, but say they have some, right? They have a grant.
Yeah.
And they want to start integrating robots from an onboarding standpoint. How do you all recommend taking bites out of the apple to get started in it?
Yeah, well, the thing, if you have no money, you can get started with our virtual robotics platform, like right now. You can go to vr.vex.com. That's the picture of our virtual robot right there. We created during the pandemic. We have many, many playgrounds that are still free that you can utilize today. And you can utilize our curriculum at educationonvex.com there for free. And then you can also take our free online professional development course. So what I tell people, if you're interested in getting started with VEX, the cost is nothing. You can get started right now. It won't cost you a thing. If you have limited funds and you do want to get started, if you want to give students a hands-on experience, then I'd recommend you get started with VEX Go. It is the cheapest of our platforms in terms of getting started building. And it really does present to you a really nice way to get students started in that engineering design process, and also embedded, of course, in that is the technology and the science all incorporated within it. So it's a really nice platform to be able to get started with. If you want to lean more into our computer science and not necessarily the engineering so much, then the VexAIM platform that we just came out with is another great way to be able to do that. And if you don't have the funds to do divide like an entire classroom bundle, if you got a onesie twosie, they just create learning centers in the back of your classroom. Give kids an opportunity to go and explore that on their own so that they can feel confident doing that, and then you can kind of grow the program from there. That's honestly what I did when I first got started. I made like an initial I think it was like a $3,000 investment in my classroom. I begged, pleaded, borrowed, and stole from my principal to do that. And then once it became successful, I was kind of able to grow it from there.
David, it's been wonderful getting a chance to meet you. If listeners are interested in learning more about Vex Robotics, we will have a link to the website and the text accompanying the podcast. We'll also have a link to David's book. It's been great getting a chance to meet you, and it's really awesome to see the passion that you have for, you know, really helping students have an engaged learning experience with something that's going to be cool at the end of the day.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time. I really enjoyed the interview. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. My guest today has been Jason McKenna. He's the Vice President for Global Education Strategy at Vex Robotics. He's also the author of What Can STEM Do for Your Classroom? Thank you all for listening to Teaching Matters. Special thanks to April Koska and Trinity Sweet for the work they do behind the scenes to make the podcast work. If you would like to reach out to the podcast, you can email us at teachingmatterspodcast@ohio.edu. That's all lowercase and all one word before the at sign. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we hope that you have a great day. We'll be right back.